Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, motherfucker, this is Nuwamba Flamingo. I want to welcome you to the tunnel. And I'm here just fucking chilling. And I want to say everybody out there who's led the meth lab or contributed or in any way done anything with it, gone there, looked at pictures, masturbated to it, vomited to it, whatever they did to it, whatever the fuck, I want to thank them because today is the 2-year anniversary of the meth lab. Meth lab, motherfuckers, yeah, 2 fucking years. I want to thank everybody who's been part of it. And I especially want to thank my motherfucking partner in crime, Frankie Metro, for assisting me with this fucked up publication and getting out a bunch of cool, crazy, fucked up motherfuckers and doing a really cool thing with me. I really appreciate that, and I appreciate everybody who's been a part of it. And hopefully we'll have another couple years and some different stuff there. And it'll also kick ass, too. So, yeah. What's up, everybody? Nuwamba Flamingo. Much respect and much love.
The poem's called Having a Coke with You. It's even more fun than going to San Sebastian, Irun, Ondai, Biarritz, Bayonne, or being sick to my stomach on the Travessera de Gracia in Barcelona. Partly because in your orange shirt you look like a better, happier St. Sebastian. Partly because of my love for you, partly because of your love for yogurt, partly because of the fluorescent orange tulips around the birches, partly because of the secrecy our smiles take on before people in statuary. It is hard to believe when I'm with you that there can be anything as still, as solemn, as unpleasantly definitive as statuary when right in front of it, in the warm New York 4 o'clock light. We are drifting back and forth between each other like a tree breathing through its spectacles. And the portrait show seems to have no faces in it at all, just paint. You suddenly wonder why in the world anyone ever did them. I look at you, and I would rather look at you than all the portraits in the world except possibly for the Polish rider occasionally, and anyway it's in the Frick, which thank heavens you haven't gone to yet so we can go together the first time. And the fact that you move so beautifully more or less takes care of futurism, just as at home I never think of the nude descending a staircase or, at a rehearsal, a single drawing of Leonardo or Michelangelo that used to wow me. And what good does all the research of the Impressionists do them when they never got the right person to stand near the tree when the sun sank? Or for that matter, Marino Marini, when he didn't pick the rider as carefully as the horse. It seems they were all cheated of some marvelous experience, which is not going to go wasted on me, which is why I'm telling you about it.
parish run. I want it to rain today. I want it to rain 1,000 children's birthdays. I hope they have to evacuate Disneyland and that the weather messes up your hair and that the wind blows the tablecloths off the tables of 5,000 outdoor weddings and that at least one golfer is struck by lightning and that there is a slight mudslide on the golf course and that several people need to buy new shoes. I hope that the T-Mobile and the Sprint cell phone towers go out for several hours, and at certain parts of the city, the internet connection is unavailable for several hours as well, leaving countless men with blue balls after they are unable to finish jacking off, and Craigslist casual encounters left unrealized.
All right, that was The Damned with Dozen Girls, of course. Really great track. You guys are listening to the Draconia Vampire Tunnel is closed for repairs. I'm your host, DJ Frankie Flash Metro. Big shout out to my partner in crime, Mr. Nuwamba Flamingo, and a great introduction there at the beginning. Got some great stuff on the show tonight, actually. We've got Fantagram, we've got Prince Buster, Reagan Youth, Stegosaurus Rex, Wax Taylor, and the return of Birdie Nom Nom. All that, plus more, right here on the Draconian Vampire Tunnel. Remember to call in, of course, 805-856-2808. You guys are actually listening to the Failed Libido edition of the Draconian Vampire Tunnel. And I think sticking with that kind of spirit, I don't know, sticking with that kind of spirit, we're going to go with coming up next. I do want to go ahead and play this one. I'm going to get this one out of the way. This is Dick Dale. And the Dalephonics, maybe? I'm not sure what the name of his band is. But this is Dick Dale. And the name of the song is Mexico. We'll be right back. Dick Dale. Name of the song is called Mexico. That was actually gauged at being 5 minutes and 8 seconds long, but apparently it's only 3 minutes and 10 seconds long. Sometimes we have certain discrepancies here in the Draconian Vampire Tunnels, such as be expected when you're dealing with Draconian Vampires Tunnels, voices, Frank O'Hara's, Lee Scratch Perry's, all that good stuff. So, gotta roll with the punches. That's the way it goes. I don't know. I don't know what to give you guys next. Since I go ahead, you know what? I already mentioned Lee Scratch Perry, and of course, if you guys are not familiar with Lee Scratch Perry, he is an up-and-coming Draconian Vampire All-Star. I'm going to try to familiarize you guys with Lee Scratch Perry a little bit more. This is a song called Clint Eastwood. You guys may have actually heard the sequel to the song by the Upsetters called Clint Eastwood Rides Again. But this is actually Lee Scratch Perry. The song is called Clint Eastwood. Sort of like Fistful of Dollars versus For a Few Dollars More. We'll be right back.
Crossing through El Portal near a street because it is a street shaped like a pair of scissors with a circle cutting up the dimensions that meet at this intersection where downtown meets Old Town and the country club nestles up against the express inn. And at night, the western sky is illuminated by the glow of the red neon Por Vida tattoo sign, and the sounds in the heavens nearby is not of doves crying, but of pigeons fucking.
That was Lee Scratch Perry with Clint Eastwood. I don't know about you guys, but I never remember seeing Clint Eastwood being that jovial. That was a very jovial beat. It was an upbeat as opposed to an upsetter. But yeah, Clint Eastwood, Lee Scratch Perry. Really great stuff, of course, off of Trojan Records. Not Trojan Records, but Trojan Records. All that great stuff. Big shout out to American Heroes Radio, which is just logged out of the chat room. I see you there. Hello, American Heroes Radio. Not sure who you are, but we like heroes here. We like to think that we bring a lot of heroes to the Draconian Vampire Tunnel, although it can be misconstrued as being anti-heroes most of the time. I myself happen to be a big fan of anti-heroes, such as Daredevil, The Punisher, also Al Sharpton, Malcolm X, Fred Hampton, William Shatner, anti-hero, there you go. All that great stuff. We do run into certain people like that. But coming up next, we're going to run into a little band out of Sarasota Springs, New York, a band by the name of Fantagram. We're going to actually play a song called Turn It Off. Not going to really pay attention to the advice, but we will play the song nonetheless right here on the Draconian Vampire Tunnel, which is still closed for repairs. Number to call in, of course, 805-856-2802. We've got Fantagram coming up next, right after that, possibly Run Youth, and then the Project U newsfeed. All that plus more. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
held hands with her own reflection as she walked by the storefronts in the dazzling midday sun. As long as she didn't pause long enough to consider the condition of her pores, she saw herself as a molten soil of elements, swimming between the crosswalk and the sidewalk. And when she passed St. John's and she saw herself against the glow of the stained glass, she thought, that's where I belong. This is me, the 13th station of the cross. Distracted as she was by the vision, her sandaled, pedicured foot noticed the dead cat before she did.
Cat out there. It's yours. Yo, am I on this thing? What on earth happened? I believe I'm on air right now. I believe I am. Can't be sure about that. Where on earth is the host, anyhow?
You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Am I live on air?
You're live on air, man. You're live on air.
Yeah. This, ladies and gentlemen, is a news feed out of an underground Vaconian vampire tunnel closed for repairs. There's a lot of news going on. There's some news going, peanuts and four women's panties and armored tanks on the face and representing a large pot of everything. That's used to melt spraying urine, and my favorite scent is made of errors due to father's ears after bathing with gravel in the living room with melon and razor blade. A fraction of the cheese ball fried her face was thrown from the windows. Air directly broken their great uncle Fred Tandy Unicorn. Favorite weapon in the military? Watermelon razor blades. Father slices his ear off and mails it to Uncle Fred, who stabs a unicorn with a deep fried hairball. Just then, a giant helicopter made of gravel and cheese crashes through the living room window wearing a discarded toilet seat on its head. Here's a giant donkey with an even bigger blue lizard stuck in his rectum. He screams for more firewood as Grandma churns the oracle with a gobble of yogurt. She is a walking glob of mashed potatoes, fishing from a boat made of orphan zebras. Crushed, the isolated fishing boat, made from a zebra, is walking her gross mass production of the famous oracle yogurt cup. And he and his work, a lot of crying out for firewood, larger giant blue lizard butt. And that's been your news feed here for the Draconian Vampire Tunnels Closed for Repairs. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
This is Big Dad. I want to see my boy. Anybody see my boy?
Hey, yo. My goddamn daughter. Shut the fuck up.
Please.
the pool, football coach, and poet.
That was Reagan Youth with DJ Raider, which was actually, maybe actually a cover of the Lone Rangers from Airheads, or the reverse. Maybe the Lone Rangers were actually covering Reagan Youth. I'm not sure. It's kind of like a perplexing conundrum. Although it is a great song, and I appreciate the fuck out of the cover, regardless of which way it's coming. Before that, you guys actually heard Fantagram with Turn It Off. Of course, Fantagram, writing and recording and born in upstate New York, called Harmony Lodge. The band was actually inspired by an optical illusion in which a 2D object appears to be three-dimensional. So we run into situations like that a lot here in the Draconian Vampire Tunnel. You can always look at something at one moment. It can look like a rat fink or an astronaut. The next minute you look at it, it's a pair of twin anarchists in black tracksuits. That kind of stuff happens. Coming up next. You know, I can't hold on to these guys very much longer, and I'm going to have to go ahead and just drop some bombs. Birdie Nom Nom. Song is entitled Violons. Not violins, violons, actually. Right here, Draconian Vampire Tunnel is closed to repairs. I'm your host, DJ Frankie Flash Metro. Yeah, we'll be right back.
In the latest issue of FLOES Neglected Tropical Diseases, a distinguished group of virologists, epidemiologists, and infectious disease specialists say that's not a hypothetical question. They argue that Chagas disease, a parasitic infection transmitted by blood-sucking insects, has become so widespread and serious while remaining largely unrecognized that it deserves to be considered a public health emergency. Extending the metaphor, they liken Chagas' stealth spread to the early days of AIDS. Both diseases are health disparities, disproportionately affecting people living in poverty. Both are chronic conditions requiring prolonged treatment courses, as with patients in the first 2 decades of the HIV/AIDS epidemic. Most patients with Chagas disease do not have access to healthcare facilities. Both diseases are also highly stigmatizing, a feature that for Chagas disease further complicates access to essential medicines, as well as access to serodiagnosis and medical. Thank you.
www.harrylovetriangle.com. HarryLoveTriangle.com is your one-stop three-way love connection. Straight, gay, bi, try anything times 3.com. Love connection.
All right, that was Birdie Nom Nom with Violons. Really, really tight stuff. And I have to say, man, I'm going to give mad props to a homeboy in the video who's, like, throwing his wrist like a real G. Like a real G should. Yeah. Birdie Nom Nom. Man, I love those guys. And you guys can expect more of them on Draconian Vampire Tunnel. Because as I mentioned, they are Draconian Vampire Tunnel All-Stars. Did I mention that? Maybe I didn't mention that, but I should have. Man, I don't know where to go from here. I really don't. Oh, wait a minute. Is this a goodie in my bag here? Is this a goodie in my goodie bag? I believe it is. Stegosaurus Rex, name of the song is Nowhere to Run. We'll be right back. Emma Goldman polished her shoes with the hairy tongues of Rat Fink constituents who broke off ties with socialist comparison and gained favor with palpable politicians in return for the chance to rake out her eyes, eat all her teeth, and dull her wit. A long red thread strung out over the walls of her cell and into the casket from a purchased triptych screen of legionnaires in black track suits and black bandanas. Nobody said that marching didn't mean that there wasn't reason for it all, but God damn it, Kropotkin never dynamite, and the threadbare as she may be, E.G., is really just another disheveled hairpin without makeup. So you can see where to pull the pin and to throw the grenade.
Uh-huh.
That was Prince Buster with The Outlaw. Before that, you guys actually heard Stegosaurus Rex with Nowhere to Run. Of course, Stegosaurus Rex bears the question, what happens when a former computer engineer takes off his clothes and makes music in his underwear? And in between exams, while pre-partying, he thinks of titles and song lyrics that include such wonderful phrases as, you're gonna die, I'm gonna kill you. Stegosaurus Rex, Nowhere to Run, Prince Buster, The Outlaw, subversive, I guess, would be a better term. A lot of subversive themes during this show. We like to do that kind of stuff here. We like to. Of course, if you guys want, you can always go to the Literary Underground, www.theliteraryunderground.org, and get all your subversive or non-subversive information concerning your mother's medicine cabinet, Project U Radio, and, of course, Dracodian Vampire Tunnels. Coming up next, looks like we've got, You know, I said earlier I wanted to say Birdie Nom Nom, but I think this very well could take the all-star moment of the show tonight. Coming up next, Crystal Castles, a little song called Crime Wave, right here on Draconian Vampire Tunnel, which is still closed for repairs. I'm your host, DJ Frankie Flash Metro. Number to call in is 805-856-2808.
Yeah, and then one of these crooked-faced, dirty-shirted, dirty-faced savages on the bus shoves a half-eaten slice of pizza in my face. I shake my head, no thank you. He shoves it at three more passengers, and none of them yells, you fucking pig, get off the bus, because I'm about to put you in the hospital. And we're already in front of Presbyterian. That way, you're right here and ready to be scraped off the street. I pull the cable to alert the driver that I'll just walk the rest of the way to the plasma clinic. I don't want to walk past them, but to exit. But people are already boarding the front of the bus. One of the females yells, whore! But I'm not sure it's at me.
I'm
Hello, this is Margie Palmer. I'm bringing to you this evening a 30-second conspiracy theories and movie review starring Stephen Moskovich and Panifesto Fantastic Funhouse.
Andy the androgynous android is America's Got Talent, was created by CIA to hypnotize people with surprising operatic voice with aid of mesmerizing color contact lens that will lull country into false sense of security.
Yes, and tonight we'll be discussing The Columbia Connection, which is a 1978 production by Gustavo Nieto Roa. It is about a Colombian and American detective uniting with a bionic woman to infiltrate and destroy the largest drug trafficking ring in the world, and it is situated in the Colombian jungle. The trio's ultimate goal is to confront the beautiful and wicked leader of the crime ring, which is an actress portrayed by Virginia Vallejo, who is also Pablo Escobar's ex-girlfriend, but not at least for 4 more years. Her tell-all expose regarding her relationship with Escobar wasn't released in 2007.
All right. That was Crystal Castles with Crime Wave. Really, really dig that track. Of course, Crystal Castles will be making a lot of more appearances right here on the Draconian Vampire Tunnel because they just kick ass like that. Kind of a short show this week, but, you know, we're trying to get ready for Zyfez Oakland, which is coming up very soon, starting, of course, on July 5th at the Punk Hostage Press reading at the Baltic Club in, I believe that's actually in Oakland, I believe. Not sure. Oakland or Berkeley? It's in the Bay Area. And of course, if you guys are in the Bay Area, you should definitely stop by for that because it will be one hell of a time. Right now, I'm actually joined by the operator of the meth lab, Mr. Nuwamba Flamingo. Nuwamba, hello.
Yo, man, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm all right, man. I'm all
right.
Right on. I'm all right. I'm psyched, man. I'm fucking psyched up, dude.
And why are you psyched up? Why are you psyched up, sir?
And I'm fucking psyched up, man, because it's fucking meth lab, dude. 2 fucking years of the meth
lab.
I never thought...
2 years.
Yeah, 2 fucking years, man. I never thought it would actually last that long. I thought we would get pulled down or something. We actually did get pulled down temporarily for about a day or two at one point. I'm very surprised that it's lasted this long, and I'm pleasantly surprised. I'm very happy. So it's been fucking cool, man.
Fucking A, man. Happy. And we got some great stuff on the burner, actually, coming up pretty soon. We got Carl Kowalski's new column coming out, and... Man, I don't know. We got more stuff from you, of course. We got more stuff. We actually just found our very own photographer, I guess, of sorts. Panifesto, Porntastic Funhouse, is the official Meth Lab photographer. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good shit.
Yes, and we're gonna expand it, too. We're going to have a lot more pictures, hopefully some music, some different things there. So there's going to be a lot of stuff happening.
Fucking A. Fucking A. Since you're on the program with us, transmitting all the way from the eastern side of the world, perhaps you'd like to share something with us tonight, sir.
I would like to share something. I've had a vision from the future.
Really?
I have. I've had a vision from the future.
Interesting.
And I wrote something about it, and I would like to share it.
Please.
It's a little piece I had that was based on a vision from the future. It's called The Creature That Came From Mitt Romney's Ass. And I'll read it right now. The first 2012 presidential debate was in full swing, and the candidates fired off to moderator Wolf Blitzer's questions. Finally, it was time for audience Q&A. One for Mitt Romney was first. cameras panned towards a portly middle-aged man from the front of the audience. The man had a shiny bald head and long auburn beard so scruffy it made the lower portion of his face look like an unkempt sideways vagina. The sideways vagina-faced man arose slowly, lifted his arms in the air, and launched into a series of Gregorian chants. Upon hearing this, Romney was transfixed, staring blankly at the man. Audience and commentators alike were perplexed and gazed around at each other. Murmurs of confusion quickly enveloped the room. After about 20 seconds, the sideways vagina-faced man's chanting stopped, and Romney began shaking as if he was having an epileptic seizure. He then froze up completely, made a Gregorian chant sound back at the man, and levitated nearly 6 feet off the ground. Romney's body illuminated in a soft white glow, and his skin reddened significantly, almost to the point that he looked like a lobster. He continued his chanting steadily without pause and struck a Jesus Christ pose. His stomach quickly distended, reaching 9 month pregnancy size in mere seconds. Suddenly, his body rotated 180 degrees, and a small hand covered in blood tore out of his ass, ripping right through his tailored slacks. Just a few seconds later, another bloody hand jutted out. The two hands together pushed apart his now visible cheeks, and a creature with a football-shaped head and little black horns emerged from Romney's asshole. As the creature's head poked out, it peered around the room, squinting. Its eyes were slightly slanted. It proceeded to somersault out of Romney's ass and landed in a kung fu kicking-type position in the middle of the debate floor, right in between the two podiums. Dripping with Romney's blood and shit, the creature had virtually no neck, an unusually small torso, and wiry arms and legs with bony hands and feet. Its skin was dark, burgundy red. It had a flat nose, no ears, and 5 felt yellow stars nailed to its chest. Atop its football-shaped head was a crown of thorns, hanging to the side like a beret. It sort of looked like Stewie from Family Guy if Stewie had been spending too much time in tanning salons and taking too much acid. Audience members shrieked, but were glued to their seats. Wolf Blitzer had a heart attack and died. The press corps showered the creature in a sea of flash photography. The creature made a salute of some sort and cried out the Pledge of Allegiance in a stuttering, indistinct foreign accent to an American flag hanging from the roofs, from the room's rafters. President Obama stood cool during the entire episode, not showing a hint of emotion. He waved off his Secret Service detail as they attempted to shield him from the creature. After completing the Pledge of Allegiance, the creature turned its sights to Obama. It lowered itself down to the floor on hands and knees and got into a crouching position, then sprung up and flew at warp speed at Obama, landing on his chest. The creature bear-hugged Obama, wrapped its arms around his waist, and planted a sloppy kiss on his lips. Before Secret Service could swarm in, the creature and Obama rocketed upwards about 20 feet high, and the two suspended in air, locked together, kissing passionately. The creature's kisses turned to tiny bites of Obama's lips and cheeks that soon became large chomps of forehead, eyes, nose, ears, everything. However, as the creature ate Obama's face, curiously, there was no blood at all. What was Obama's head gave way to air, thin air. The creature devoured rapidly through the remainder of Obama's body until nothing was left except for a small red lifeless fetus hanging upside down around the area Obama's stomach should have been. When the creature noticed the fetus, it stopped biting and took the fetus into its arms. The fetus also had a football head and black horns. The creature bowed its head and began weeping and clutching onto the fetus maternally. The bloody ass, levitating Romney, lowered to the floor. The crowd, which had been shrieking and hollering, was instantly muted. The sideways vagina-faced man had a heart attack and died. The press corps stopped taking pictures. The entire room went silent, so silent that not a sound could be heard, except for the creature's wailing sobs as it hugged the fetus and held it close. And that's the end of that piece.
Yeah. And you guys, if you are proponents for masticated politics, of course, you can always go to the Meth Lab at www.methlab1234.com. .blogspot.com and get your picks for that. God damn, dude, that is such a heavy story. I really, really enjoy the part where the Mitt Romney ass goblin, as I like to call it, lunged at Barack Obama and the two levitated in the air, and basically he devoured Obama. That's crazy, man. Fuck.
Well, thank you, man. And you know, I think the point I was trying to make when he ate Obama and there was just thin air there is that, like, there is nothing to Barack Obama. You know, he came on to the scene talking about change and hope and all this stuff. And, you know, I don't know how much of that there really was.
Right.
Because everything he's done has been half-assed. And you know, he hasn't really lived up to most of the promises that he made.
Indeed.
You know, and it just he's just basically turned out to be another full-of-shit politician.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that basically is nothing but air. Thin air.
Yeah, he turned into, like, popcorn, basically, for this Mitt Romney ass goblin, so.
Yeah.
I can see that. Great metaphor, dude. Really great metaphor. Fucking A.
Thank you. Yeah, that's what I was trying to get at with that, but, you know, it was a fun piece to write, and, you know, hopefully it'll show up somewhere at some point.
Yeah, I think, I'm hoping that it will show up somewhere, and, of course, if it doesn't, it could always show up on the Meth Lab.
It just might.
That's true. Fuck, dude, and since you're on the program, perhaps we could discuss the possibility of a Meth Lab 2-year anniversary show in the near future, since you are looking into the future and all.
Well, we definitely need to do one of those. However, a time and date will have to be determined.
Mm-hmm.
Because I am having many issues right now.
Ah.
Having many issues, and I'm not having a lot of time to be able to do many BTR shows or to participate in the lively discussions on Facebook and such things. So, you know, I've not had much time to do that recently, but sometime in the future, maybe in the next couple of weeks, I think that we need to put one of these things together before June is over, certainly.
Fucking A. I agree, sir. You know what? You guys can actually look forward to that here in the near future, I think, since we are clairvoyant like that. You can see that happening, definitely. We just got to we're going to have to coordinate our telepathic abilities, because it is quite a job to coordinate telepathic abilities in between the eastern and western part of Earth. It's very hard.
Yeah. It is, man. It really is. It is difficult logistically.
Yes, it is. But I think we can do it.
But we'll figure it out. Yeah, we'll figure it out. We always do.
Fucking A, man. I appreciate you coming on the show tonight, bro. I don't know. I actually got a surprise for you later on at the end of the show if you want to hang out for a minute.
I am down to hang out for a minute, man. How long are you going to be on for?
We got another 2 minutes, I think. Or actually, another 10 or 15 minutes, something like that.
Another 10 or 15 minutes? All right, man, let's keep it going.
Right on, man. Speaking of that, Wax Taylor, name of this song is Lost the Way. And I'll actually take this opportunity to bow out verbally for the rest of the show. And I do appreciate all the Draconian Vampire Tunnel voices that came on the program, especially the news feed, and, of course, Nuwamba Flamingo, and... really great stuff on the show tonight, man. I'm going to leave you guys with this. This is called Wax Taylor. The name of the song is Lost the Way. We'll catch you guys next week.
I'm sorry. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I'd like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. This world has room for everyone, and the good earth is rich. It can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful. But we have lost the way. developed speed. We have shut our senses. Our knowledge has made us cynical. Our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much, feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness. Without these qualities, life will be violent, and all will be lost.
Junkies never showed at 103rd Street. The 103rd Street boys were all old-timers, thin, sallow faces, bitter, twisted mouths, stiff-fingered, stylized gestures. There's a junk gesture that marks the junkie like the limp wrist marks the fag. The hand swings out from the elbow, stiff-fingered, palm up. They were of various nationalities and physical types, but they all looked alike somehow. They all looked like junk. There was Irish, George the Greek, Pentapon Rose, Louis the Bellhop, Eric the Fag, the Beagle, the Sailor, and Joe the Mex. Several of them are dead now. Others are doing time. There are no more junkies at 103rd and Broadway waiting for the connection. The connection has gone somewhere else, but the feel of junk is still there. It hits you at the corner, follows you along the block, then falls away like a discouraged panhandler as you walk on. Joe the Mex had a thin face with a long, sharp, twitchy nose and a down-curving, toothless mouth. Joe's face was lined and ravaged, but not old. Things had happened to his face, but Joe was not touched. His eyes were bright and young. There was a gentleness about him, common to many old-time junkies. You could spot Joe blocks away. In the anonymous city crowd, he stood out sharp and clear, as though you were seeing him through binoculars. He was a liar, and like most liars, he was constantly changing his stories, altering time and personnel from one telling to the next. One time he would tell a story about some friend. Next time he would switch the story around to give himself the lead. He would sit in the cafeteria over coffee and pound cake, talking at random about his experiences. We knew this Chinaman has some stuff stashed, and we try every way to make him tell us where it is. We have him tied to a chair. I light matches. He made a gesture of lighting a match and put them under his feet. He won't say nothing. I feel so sorry for that man. Then my partner hit him in the face with his gun, and the blood ran all down his face. He put his hands over his face and drew them down to indicate the flow of blood. When I see that, I turn sick at my stomach, and I say, let's get out of here and leave the man alone. He ain't going to tell us nothing. Louis was a shoplifter who had lost what nerve he ever had. He wore a long, shabby, black overcoat that gave him the look of a furtive buzzard. Thief and junkie stuck out all over him. Louis had a hard time making it. I heard that one time he had been a stool pigeon, but the time I knew him, he was generally considered right. George the Greek did not like Louis and said he was just a bum. Don't ever invite him to your home. He'll take advantage. He'll go on the nod in front of your family. He's got no class to him. George the Greek was the admitted arbiter of this set. He decided who was right and who was wrong. George prided himself on his integrity. I never beat nobody. George was a three-time loser. The next time meant life as an habitual criminal. So his life narrowed down to the necessity of avoiding any serious involvements. No pushing, no stealing. He worked from time to time on the docks. He was hemmed in on every side, and there was no way for him to go but down. When he couldn't get junk, which was about half the time, he drank and took goofballs. He had two adolescent sons who gave him a lot of trouble. George was half sick most of the time in this period of scarcity, and no match for these young louts. His face bore the marks of a constant losing fight. The last time I was in New York, I couldn't find George. The 103rd Street boys are scattered now, and no one I talked to knew what happened to George the Greek. Fritz the janitor was a pale, thin little man who gave the impression of being crippled. He was on parole after doing 5 years because he scored for a pigeon. The pigeon was hard up for someone to turn in, and the narcotics agent urgently needed to make an arrest. Between them, they built Fritz up to a big-time dope peddler and smashed a narcotics ring with his arrest. Fritz was glad to attract so much attention, and he talked complacently about his nickel in Lexington. The fag was a brilliantly successful lush worker. His scores were fabulous. He was the man who gets to a lush first. Never the man who arrives on the scene when the lush is lying there with his pockets turned inside out. A sleeping lush, known as a flop in the trade, attracts a hierarchy of scavengers. First come the top lush workers, like the fag, guided by a special radar. They only want cash, good rings, and watches. Then come the punks who will steal anything. They take the hat, shoes, and belt. Finally, brazen, clumsy thieves will try to pull the lush's overcoat or jacket off him. The fag was always first on a good lush. One time he scored for $1,000 at the 103rd Street Station. Often his scores ran into the hundreds. If the lush woke up, he would simper and feel the man's thigh as though his intentions were sexual. From this trick, he got his moniker. He always dressed well, usually in a tweed sports coat and gray flannels. A European charm of manner and a slight Scandinavian accent completed his front. No one could have looked less like a lush roller. He always worked alone. His luck was good, and he was determined to avoid contamination. Sometimes contact with the lucky can change a man's run of bad luck, but generally it works the other way. Junkies are an envious lot. 103rd Street envied the fag his scores. But everyone had to admit he was a right guy and always good for a small touch.